Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for sharing part of your day with me. On September 11th, 2001, about an hour after American Airlines Flight 11 hit the North Tower of the World Trade Center, the United States airspace shut down. By noon, the radar air traffic control screens that tracked air traffic, they were blank. To help avert any more potential threats to the U.S., inbound U.S. flights were redirected. It was called Operation Yellow Ribbon. But where did all the planes already in flight land? One small town, located at the most easterly point of North America, took on an unlikely role. The town of Gander, located in the Canadian province of Newfoundland, thank you, with a population of 9,000, received close to 6,700 plus passengers who stayed for 5 days. Just imagine if in New York City, a little over 5 million people just showed up on the day of an emergency. The residents of Gander, a town with only 15 taxis, immediately stepped up and showed an extraordinary level of goodwill and hospitality. School bus drivers who'd been on strike volunteered to drive airplane passengers from the airport. People stayed up all night cooking so there could be breakfast in the morning. The ice hockey rink was turned into an indoor refrigerator to accommodate all the food that was donated. At first, some were scared. There were rumors of chaos on the planes. There were 38 of them. Possibly the planes might have bombs on them. But kindness overtook fear, and the stranded passengers were taken care of and treated like family. The story of Gander was eventually turned into the Broadway hit musical Come From Away. And now a new documentary, You Are Here, A Come From Away Story, will debut in the U.S. tonight and will be screening in more than 800 theaters nationwide. You Are Here's producer, Peter Gentile, and three of the people featured in the documentary are joining me. Oz Fudge, police officer from Gander. Hi, Oz. Hello. And Nick and Diane Marson, two of the passengers who met and fell in love in this tiny town. Hi.
Hi.
Thank you all for coming in. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank
you. So, Oz, I want you to remember back to September 10th, 2001.
All right.
What was the big news? What were the big doings in Gander that day? What was everybody talking about?
Getting ready for school.
Yeah.
And that's basically what it was. I mean, schools, they have these half days and part days where the kids are going in to get registered and everything else. But that's what it was. That was the big thing.
Diane and Nick, where were you? Where were you? You guys were on the plane. Where were you going?
Okay. I was coming back to Houston, where I lived, after having a lovely vacation with my son and his family who were stationed in the U.S. Air Force in England. Mm-hmm. So I was going home to work.
And you were going to visit Texas?
Yes, I was from England, employed in the oil industry, and I was coming to Houston to do some work. We were both on the same plane. We did not meet on the airplane.
We met in the shelter.
Mm-hmm. Oz, when did you first get word on the ground that there were going to be all of these planes headed your way?
Well, what it was, I didn't even realize what had happened. I was just running my radar on the street, the only four lane we have in the town, which is Airport Boulevard, and it wasn't for Bonnie Harris, pound manager mm-hmm. for the SPCA, and she told me to turn on my radio. I'd go home, look at it, see on TV, and I realized then, because we're an international airport and we have an air traffic control center there that employs quite a few, and we govern all the flights to go back and forth to Europe, I was thinking there may be something to this. Mm-hmm. So when I went to the RCMP detachment, they just said yes. They said that all their members were going to be at the airport, and the municipal police was going to have to run the town. There was only two of us, so I keep saying we had the town surrounded with the two of us.
Why is Gander an international airport?
Well, see,
the history of it.
The history of Gander, I mean, the airport was a major factor during World War II mm-hmm. because the aircraft, you either went by ship that was sunk or they had to fly. So Gander was the jump-off point to get it to Europe. So the planes mm-hmm. would come to Gander and then go on. And then as time went on into the 50s and 60s and international travel became even bigger,
yeah.
We were the largest gas station in the world.
That was your role.
Yeah, that was our role. I'm very proud of it.
Diane, at what point did you realize that you were going to be in this town for more than a day.
Yes. The captain came on about 4 hours into the flight and said that there was an emergency in the U.S. airspace. I thought it was maybe a computer problem. Mm-hmm. And he said we were landing in Canada. And I thought, well, I've never been to Canada. Mm-hmm. This might be fun. Not really knowing what had happened, of course.
Peter, that was a friend saying, hey, your documentary is on WNYC right now.
Probably my mom listening to us on the radio right now.
Happens often.
Hi, Mom.
Yeah, hi, Mom.
So, Peter, you were working on an entirely different film, different story when 9/11 happened.
I was working on a series about organized crime and going to set, and I got a phone call this tragedy had happened. Mm-hmm. Got to set, and someone had a TV. And it just stopped everything. Everyone was just focused on that event. And I think like everyone in the world basically were mesmerized by this tragedy in New mm-hmm. York and, you know, kind of left a lasting impression. Little did I know that, you know, but 16 or 17 years later, I'd be working on a project that had to do with that. But people haven't forgotten. And it's a story that sort of we're always going to be dealing with. So
how did you find out about what happened in Gander?
I think like everyone, mesmerized by the TV, you know, you'd heard about the story in Gander, but it was deep in the background mm-hmm. and you kind of weren't focused because just the sheer horror of what happened and that kind of innocence was lost on us. And over time, you know, there was a book written about it the day the world came to town. There, Tom Brokaw had done a piece on it. There had been news stories and, you know, all sorts of different things. And then David and Irene wrote a musical about it. And that's sort of when we kind of first really started focusing in terms of making it into a project because the musical is one way of interpreting the story. But then there's, you know, we come from documentary tradition and background. And so we thought, you know, there's a story here to tell in terms of the real people that are in it. And that's how we came about.
Yeah, it seemed like that it was a great film because it put together all the little pieces of information that had been everywhere and then created one storyline that you could really follow. Yes. And become invested mm-hmm. in the people and invested in everything that happened. So when the town sort of got together and said that we're going to do this, how did you communicate with one another? I mean, this really was before cell phones. This yes. was, you know, this was a time when we couldn't just, you know, oh, I'll Google that yeah. and make it happen.
Yeah. No, and that was one of the problems that we had, communication. The only thing that we had was either the landline. Now, there were cell phones back then, mm-hmm. but it was the big brick ones. So it was either by landline or messages, mm-hmm. You know, because there was passengers at a lot of all the schools in the town and all the private clubs and anywhere that a head could lie, there was a passenger. And so it was either I'd go around and pick up messages and bring it to, there's our local Rogers Cable, they have a local channel. Mm-hmm. And Brian Mosier, who was the volunteer at that time, he was the one who would read out the messages over the air and say, okay, Gander Academy needs toilet paper. You know, mm-hmm. there's 800 passengers, 150 volunteers. So if you're downtown, pick up a couple of rolls, or if you got it at home, drop it off. And, you know, like 2.5 hours later, the message was, for God's sake, stop bringing toilet paper to Gander Academy. The classroom was full, and we don't know where else to put it. So that's how. So the minute the word got out there, people responded.
And while it's a funny story, it's a very telling story about how generous people were and how they immediately wanted to help.
Yes.
That's what I
yes.
love about that story. Had anything ever in your training as a police officer trained you for something like
no.
what you experienced?
I mean, you know, where do you find where 7,000 people drops in for a bucket of tea and a bicky? Mm-hmm. Where do you find that? You know, what are you going to do with them? And that's basically what it was. And, you know, and especially when you look on the TV and you see what's going on in New York and you know that, mm-hmm. and we've always considered America our neighbor, our friends, our family to the south of us. So we knew you guys were hurting and we knew we had to do something.
For all the passengers on the ground, Diane and Nick, what were you all talking about in those first early hours? Because these folks are trying to mobilize and get things together. You don't really know what's happened yet.
We don't. Until when we landed, the captain told us what had happened, but there was no way that we had any concept of the enormity of it until we got to our shelter and we saw the looping news.
Right. Yeah. I think everyone was in shock on our plane. We were on the plane over a day because of various circumstances. They had to get ready for us. Everything had to be checked out. And I think everybody was just in shock and wondering, oh, is my family safe? What else is going to happen in the United States? Because no one could have predicted this.
Mm-hmm. What went into this decision, Peter, as you watch the footage, to let people know what had happened? Because for a while, it wasn't really, it wasn't as explicit to the people on the ground.
I mean, I think the thing was that they tried to keep everyone calm because, you know, panic could set in. Four planes have been hijacked. They attacked, one of the most famous cities on Earth in broad daylight. Who's safe after that, you know? And I think they tried to just keep everyone calm. And that was the thing, you know, you mentioned about sort of people from Newfoundland. As much as you hear about how great everybody is when you go there, they're even more than that. And hugging you is kind of like, as soon as you get there, that's what they start doing. And I think that's what it seemed to me. That's what people needed and wanted. Mm-hmm. And they were there to deliver. And it's just started to calm everybody down.
The name of the film is You Are Here, A Come From Away Story. We're talking with Peter Gentile, who's the producer of the film, Oz Fudge, a police officer, one of the two men in charge on the ground, and Nick and Diane Marson, who met in Gander. Yours is a love story. It's a lovely story. When did you realize that, there's something here? Was there a moment?
It wasn't love at first sight. It happened during the course of those 5 days.
I think it was more interest.
Yeah, we were interested in each other. We had different lives we'd come from, so we had lots of stories to share. We were on the same flight, which was a common bond.
Right. But we didn't meet until we got in the shelter.
And these wonderful Newfoundlanders, they gave us somewhere to sleep. They fed us, and then they started entertaining us.
Right.
And it was at the entertainment stage that the relationship started to grow. The one night we were screeched in, which is a Newfoundland tradition to become an honorary Newfoundlander. And the master of ceremonies thought that Diane and I were married, I guess because we'd been hanging around together. And when he found out that we weren't, he offered to marry us. And in a jovial manner, Diane said, well, why not?
Everyone was having fun, and it was a light time. Everybody was just getting by.
Mm-hmm.
And laughter is sometimes the best healer or best comforter.
And having heard that, I'm thinking, I guess in my mind, and going, well, you know what? That might work.
I'll note that.
Yeah, absolutely. Check that one off the list. And then the next day, we were taken to a geographic place called Dover Fold. And I wanted to get Diane's picture because at that point I wasn't expecting to see her again once we got back onto Life's treadmill.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted a memory to remind me that those 5 days really did happen because they were somewhat magical.
I know the two of you were sort of reticent or concerned about telling your story to people because there had been so much
loss.
We
did not speak to people other than our family and friends until 2009 about it. Because we felt badly that we found such happiness together when so many people lost someone in their family, one of their loved ones.
It's survivor's guilt.
Yeah.
But I have to imagine people were happy for you, though.
Yes, yeah. I'm thrilled that they are. After each show, people come up to us and they share their love story with us, because every couple has a love story.
Right.
Oz, what was the toughest thing, the hardest thing about those 5 days that you and the locals had to struggle to accomplish, or just was hard to figure out how to do it?
No, I'll tell you, everything seemed to work. It was just the way that the community responded. Every want or need was filled. And people never complained. We didn't run into, people say, well, there was two of you, and there was now 16,000 people in the town because the RCMP are at the airport. What went on? What crime was there? There was nothing. We never got a call. Hmm. Never got a call. So that says something about what went on during that period of time. So, you know, some of the logistics of it, getting the food ready and preparing it, and I know that the community center was used as the largest walk-in refrigerator, but stuff like that, I mean, it just fell into place.
And I just want to say, there's there are people from over 90 countries from around the world there. I mean, it's just people from all different cultures and languages or whatever thrown together, and they all got along. Yeah. It was incredible.
And the thing about it was, no one paid for anything. Everything was given. If you needed medication and you were from Uzbekistan, the druggist would stay up all night and phone over there and try and figure out, you know, because the medication here is different than over there. And, you know, and it was figured out and it was done. I mean, we always found a way around it. And that was the beauty of it all. I got the privilege of watching what was going on because I was the one that was driving around to all the different places that passengers were. And that was the beauty of it all. And it's hard to say the beauty of it, but I got to see the passengers when they came off the planes. Right, the look that was on their faces. I got to see, you know, when they first saw the towers coming down, the horror that was, and everything. And you know, something like that, your heart just sinks. But then I also got to watch as the community bonded together, and you could see the passengers changing. Like Nick was saying, that got them screeched in. We would play music every night. You know, you could see them smiling again. You could see them being happy. Then at the end of it, they were crying again, but this time they were crying because they were going.
Yeah. That was an interesting part of the film, is the realization after they left Gander and all this kindness and warmth of the world that they were going to re-enter. Tell us a little bit about that, Peter, the way some people felt after they left.
Well, I think for, you know, in those 5 days, it seemed that the bonds, which are still there today, of friendship in all different countries around the world, are still there. And for the Ganderites, it was sort of Newfoundlanders, it was tough for them because they had, you know, full cities and homes and centers, and all of a sudden everyone left. It was almost like it was deserted. And for the people that left, that went back to their regular worlds, you're going into a place where there's still a lot of uncertainty. And in a weird way, they were on this island in the middle of the Atlantic, and it was a safe place, even though they weren't part of it. They were made to feel like a new home, a temporary home, where they didn't have to worry about anything. And so now they had to re-enter into the world. And I think it's taken, the thing about the story is that over time, over these 18 years, that story has grown and people have shared it. And it's kind of like this little time capsule or trial balloon in terms of a world that they would like to be part of or participate in, because it was community that came together pre-digital age, where everyone just leaned on each other. And I think that that's one of the reasons that the musical and certainly our film and other projects have gained this kind of momentum, because it's something that we've kind of lost track of, I think.
Isn't it strange that the word love seems to be so alienated? Mm. I mean, that's all we did. That's what was done in Gander. We just showed some love. We cared about a person. And I find it strange, you know, like for most Newfoundlanders and Labradorians, that's the thing that we find the strangest thing of all, is how much this notoriety has come. We just think it's normal. You know, you help your neighbor.
Because one of the things is, it's like no one did a superhuman act. There's no superheroes there. They did regular stuff that anyone else can do. And it's an example for all of us, I think. It's just sort of be a kinder, gentler human being in this world that seems to have lost that. And they were that to each other. And I think the thing is why these stories have percolated a little bit more so nowadays, is it takes time after a tragedy. There's a death in the family or a divorce or bankrupt. It takes time to kind of be able to deal with it and understand it. And I think now there's enough distance from the event that you can find, and we're all going to have to deal with it at some point. We're all going to deal with tragedies. Find something in that, a light in that, that keeps you hopeful and gives you some faith to kind of keep going forward when it's really, really tough.
What does it mean for you to be here today?
Well, we really want to share our story, and mostly because we want to give people hope and to share the story of the Newfoundland people who every day they're kind, they're wonderful, they're generous. And if that helps someone else be kind and generous, then I feel like we've done something for people.
And if it hadn't been for their kindness and generosity, I wouldn't be here today. I wouldn't have met Diane.
Right.
What does it mean for you, Oz, to be here today in New York City?
Well, as a Newfoundlander Labradorian, I'm just representing the people of my province. And just to let the people of the world know, or people in New York know, that you are loved, you are a part of us. You may think, like, I'm a first responder. I spent 38 years in a uniform. I have seen stuff. And I know what a lot of these people are going through. And I just want them to know that we're out there. We're out there. So we're a safe haven. We're a place where you can come and just relax and get screeched in. So I expect you to drop by.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, drop over for a tea and a bickie.
You're going to be sorry you said that. Like, hi, Oz, it's Allison. I'm here.
Oh, no. You'll be sorry for doing it when you realize what you got to eat.
True.
But that's the thing. That's what the message is. And that's what this film is giving you. You're given a point of view from passenger side. You're given a point of view from the Newfoundlanders and Labradorian side. And I'm going to tell you, it meshes so good. And people will come out of that theater and they'll be saying, oh, my God, that's what it was like when I was young. Yes. That's what I remember that.
The world needs this story.
Yes. They need it. And this film, because the play, there's actors doing it. This one here, well, unfortunately, mine and Nick's mug is there, but that's okay.
It's a true story.
It's a true story.
And it's everyday people doing everyday things. Yeah. And if we can do something kind and sweet and generous for other people every day, just think how well off the world might be.
And let me tell you, we've played the film in Canada and in certain places, and it has been a humbling experience. I mean, the kind of emotional response from the film, people laughing, crying, and everyone has a story about 9/11. Yes. Everyone seems to come out feeling better about themselves and the world around them. And we hope that tonight in 800 screens across the U.S., people will feel the same way.
This is the United States premiere of it, because we've not been able to see it in the United States. Yes. So now is the time. Tonight is
today.
The time.
Yes. Come on, America. See this film.
It's called You Are Here, A Come From Away Story in theaters across America. Check our website for the local screening in New York City and Brooklyn. Peter, Oz, Nick, and Diane, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having us.
Wonderful.
And I'm holding you to it.
All right. This is All of It in WNYC.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.